it is time to celebrate listener birthdays for Sunday, January 28th. And we have six listener birthdays today. Phyllis Crawford of Des Moines, William Russell Emmerich of Mechanicsville, William Greenwood of West Des Moines, Merlene Hall of Des Moines, Donna J. Miller of Indianola, and Retta Smith of Van Meter. A very happy birthday to all of you. We also have a few celebrity birthdays today. Actor Nicholas Pryor is 89. Actor Alan Alda is 88. Actor Susan Howard is 82. Actor Barbie Benton is 74. Director Frank Darabont is 65. Guitarist Dave Sharp of The Alarm is 65. Singer Sam Phillips is 62. Bassist Greg Cook of Ricochet is 59. Gospel singer Marvin Sapp is 57. Singer-songwriter Sarah McLachlan is 56. Musician DJ Muggs of Cypress Hill is 56. Rapper Rakim, also 56. Humorist Mo Rocha, 55. Singer Anthony Hamilton is 53. Actor Gillian Wigman is 52. Singer-actor Joey Fatone of NSYNC is 47. Rapper Rick Ross is 47. And singer Nick Carter of the Backstreet Boys turns 44 years old today. You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service. If you're hearing us on your television on Iowa PBS and you are not a registered IRIS user, please give us a call at 515-243-6833 so we can get you on our list. We need to know who is listening in order to keep our services free. And now I'll hand it back to Ella to get us started with today's obituaries.
Donis Don E. Wipf, Altoona. Donis Don Elwin Wipf, age 72, went to be with our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on Wednesday, January 24th, 2024. Don was surrounded in those final hours by those he loved most in this world. Services will be held at Adventure Life Church, 1700 8th Street, Southwest Altoona. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, January 30th, 2024. Funeral services will begin at 11 a.m. Wednesday, January 31st, 2024 at Adventure Life Church. Burial will follow at Berwick Cemetery. In the words of Don, the bigger the better, the more the merrier. The party never ends. Richard Werzer, Des Moines, Iowa. Richard Werzer was from Coon Rapids and passed away in Des Moines on Thursday, January 25th, peacefully, surrounded by his family. He graduated from Iowa State University and was an avid Cyclone fan. He worked in the Department of Inspections and Appeals for the state of Iowa for 24 years. He loved riding in Ragbri and the Tall Dogs Bicycle Club, in addition to other area rides. He enjoyed reading for IRIS, Iowa Reading and Information Service, as well as umpiring softball, baseball, and various other sports. He will be missed. Memorials should be sent to St. Jude's. Online condolences are welcome at the Isles Funeral Home site. Roger Thompson, Ames. Roger Wayne Thompson of Ames died Tuesday, January 23, 2024, at the age of 74 at the Israel Family Hospice House in Ames. A visitation will be held from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Tuesday, January 30, 2024, at Bethesda Lutheran Church. A private family burial will be held at Ames Municipal Cemetery at a later date. Roger, the son of James and Wilma Berkey Thompson, was born February 3, 1949, in Ames, Iowa. He graduated from United Community High School in 1967. Roger served in the Army and was a Vietnam War veteran. He was proud of his service and participated in the Iowa Honor Flight to honor veterans in Washington, D.C. He retired from the Hatch Company in Ames, where he worked for most of his career. He was a member of the Ames Alano Society, where he actively mentored others for over 30 years. In his retirement, Roger was a model train enthusiast with an amazing collection of trains and an impressive outdoor miniature railway system. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the Ames Alana Society. Bill Metcalf, Norwalk. William Bill Metcalf, 96, passed away peacefully on Tuesday, January 23, 2024, surrounded by his family in his home. Visitation will be from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Tuesday, January 30th, 2024, at the Mission Church in Urbandale, followed by a funeral service at 11:30 a.m. Burial will be at Rethaven Cemetery. Bill grew up in Des Moines and attended East High. Upon graduation, he was drafted into the Army during World War II. Of all the things he achieved in his life, his greatest pride was his family. Bill loved attending his grandkids' and great-grandkids' events and cheering them on. He credits them for his youthfulness. Memorial contributions may be made in honor of Bill to the Mission Church Youth Missions. Doris Barker, Des Moines. Doris Barker, 92, passed away Wednesday, January 24, 2024, at Mercy Hospital. Doris was born March 3, 1931. She graduated from East High School, class of 1948. She worked at Northwestern Bell U.S. West for 27 years, retiring in 1981. Lily Ann Bixler, Des Moines. Lily Ann Bixler, aged 89, passed away January 25, 2024, in Dallas Center. A memorial service will be held Tuesday, January 30th, 2024 at 4 p.m., followed by a celebration of life visitation gathering from 5 to 7 p.m., both at Ernst Funeral Home. Gail Elin Easton, 73, of Ankeny, Iowa, passed away on January 21st, 2024 from complications of diabetes. She was born January 10, 1951, to Marguerite and Harlan Easton. The youngest of four daughters, she attended grade school in Makota, Iowa, and graduated from Marshalltown High School. She received her Bachelor of Physical Education degree from Truman State University, formerly Northwest Missouri State University. Gail worked for Broadlawns Hospital in Des Moines for 38 years. First as a recreational therapist, then as a social worker. She enjoyed her work, cared about the people she helped, loved her family and friends, and will be greatly missed by all who knew her. She loved dogs and through the years cared for at least one, sometimes two. A celebration of Gail's life will be held at a later date. Leo C. Lotholes. Leo Chadwick Lotholes was born August 19, 1958, in Des Moines, Iowa. The son of Peter Orville and Mary Lietta Gertzenberger Lotholes. Leo graduated from Ankeny High School in 1976. He received his associate degree in 1978 from Waldorf University and his Bachelor of Business Administration in 1980 from the University of Northern Iowa. Leo retired to the family farm in Hazleton after 28 years serving Capital View Credit Union in Des Moines as an accountant and investment manager. He was a member of the Capital Masonic Lodge No. 110 and the Scottish Rite 32nd degree, both in Des Moines. Leo loved the outdoors and brought together friends and family for camaraderie. And stewardship of the land, hosting Earth Day at the farm for more than 30 years. Leo, you are deeply missed.
Richard W. Canham, age 63, of West Des Moines, passed away on January 21st. Arrangements will be handled by Caldwell Parish Funeral Home and Crematory, with a service on February 10th at 11 a.m. at Valley Church, with interment to follow at Glendale Cemetery. Dean Johnson, age 97, of Altoona, passed away on January 20th. arrangements by Hamilton's Altoona Funeral Home. Service at the funeral home on January 29th at 10 a.m. with interment to follow at Masonic Cemetery. Bradley James Morgan, age 45, of Adel, passed away on January 20th. Arrangements by Hamilton's on Westtown Parkway with a service to be held on January 29th at 5 p.m. Irene Tower, aged 101, passed away in Des Moines on January 26th. Arrangements by Isles Dunn's Chapel. Joe Wallucate, age 50, of Des Moines, passed away on January 20th. Arrangements by Hamilton's Funeral Home with a service at the funeral home on January 29th at 11 a.m. with interment to follow at Highland Memory Gardens. Johnny Wright, age 82, of Des Moines, passed away on January 19th. Arrangements by Hamilton's near Highland Memory Gardens with a service on February 3rd at 11 a.m. and interment to follow as also at Highland Memory Gardens. Ernest D. Faber, age 97, of Perry, passed away on Wednesday, January 24th at the Perry Lutheran Home, Eden Acres in Perry. Visitation will be held from 9 a.m. until the time of the service at 10:30 a.m. on Tuesday, January 30th at First Church of Christ in Ankeny. Burial will follow in Elmwood Cemetery in Minburn with full military honors rendered by the Minburn American Legion Post 99 and the Iowa National Guard Honor Guard. Barbara Ann Haskins of Des Moines passed away peacefully at age 100 years and 81 days. A private family service will be held at a later date. Donations can be sent to Wesley Life Home Health in Johnston or the YMCA camp in Boone. Bonnie Bierman passed away on January 6th at Iowa Methodist Medical Center in Des Moines. A celebration of life will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Monday, January 29th at the Johnston Lions Club on Merle Hay Road in Johnston. Bonnie lived most of her life in Iowa. She worked 34-plus years with the Postal Service, enjoyed spending time with her family and her good friend Molly. She was an avid Iowa Hawkeye football fan and enjoyed quilting and doing many arts and crafts. Mary Ann Nesson, age 80, passed away on January 16th at Indianola Westview Care Center. Per her request, no services are planned. Mary Ann was born November 28, 1943, in Indianola to Guy and Virginia Frazier Chumbly. She graduated from Indianola High School and became a flight attendant for Braniff Airlines based out of Dallas, Texas. She was preceded in death by her daughter, Jennifer Nesson Wilson, brother, Dan Chumbly, and her beloved husband, Bill Nesson. The family would like to extend a special thank you to Indianola Westview Care Center and Seacrest Hospice for the wonderful care and compassion that Mary Ann received. Mark Allen Wilderman went to be home with the Lord on Monday, January 22nd. 60 years ago, Mark was welcomed into this world by his parents, Dick and Lynn Wilderman, on June 13, 1963, in Iowa City. He attended East High School and then went on to the University of Northern Illinois, graduating with a teaching degree. He loved kids and taught in the Des Moines Public School District for 22 years. He will always be known for his huge heart. He had a soft spot for the underdog and anyone in need of help. Visitation will be held at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, January 30th, with funeral service following at 11 a.m. at Hamilton's Funeral Home on Lyon Street in Des Moines. Memorial contributions may be directed to the Animal Rescue League in memory of Mark Wilderman. Nancy Jo Stamatelos Parson was born in Des Moines on April 7, 1949. She graduated from Valley High in 1967, attended Kansas University, transferring to the University of Iowa, where she fell in love with fellow Valley High graduate Tom Parson. They married in Des Moines in August 1974 and moved to Seaside, Oregon in 1976. They built a house in Manzanita, Oregon, overlooking the ocean. Nancy is survived by her older brother, husband, and grandson. Mara L. Nevins, On October 27th, 2012, Mara graced her parents, Lyle and Brandy Nevins, her siblings, as well as many others, with her birth. After valiantly battling brain cancer for 7 years, Mara, age 11, skipped school and graduated directly into heaven on Tuesday, December 12th. She was at home surrounded by... Regretfully, an obituary submission failed to take place prior to her services. She has already been laid to rest in Oakdale Cemetery in Adel. If you would like to honor Mara's life with a memorial contribution, you may make a donation to Tori's Angels, Children's Cancer Connection, or the Unravel Pediatric Cancer Center of Iowa. Joseph R. Jester, age 87, passed away peacefully at home on January 17th. Visitation will be held at 2 p.m. on Saturday, February 10th at Hamilton's on Westtown Parkway in West Des Moines, with a service following at 3 p.m. Interment will be private. James Jim Leroy Sayre, age 77, of West Des Moines, passed away on January 18th, 2024. He was born to James and Phyllis Sayre on June 1st, 1946, in Carroll, Iowa, and was the oldest of 13 children. A visitation celebrating Jim's life will occur at Hamilton's on Westtown Parkway in West Des Moines on February 2nd from 10 to 12 noon. Suzanne K. Schooley-Rutz passed away on January 18th. Her life from an early age had many rejections and struggles, causing mental illness and addiction. She put her faith in Jesus as her personal savior and friend, never complaining about the lack of earthly things she knew, as one day she would be walking in new light with her savior and her mom. Lee Town Assembly in Des Moines will be having a celebration of life on February 10th at 1 p.m., followed by a luncheon. And finally, Jill H. Clark, age 77, of West Des Moines, passed away peacefully at home on January 20th. She was born on October 15th, 1946, in Des Moines, to Robert and Irene Darnes Haycock. Visitation will be 4 to 6 p.m. on Friday, February 2nd, at Isles Westover Chapel. Memorial service will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, February 3rd, at New Beginnings Christian Church in Urbandale, and interment will follow later at Rest Haven Mausoleum in West Des Moines. And now back to Ella for another story.
Moms Program Grant Aid 4 Centers. 4 pregnancy resource centers have been selected to receive state funding under the controversial new state program to provide taxpayer dollars to anti-abortion facilities. The Iowa Department of Health and Human Services announced this week that it will award 4 grants under the state's More Options for Maternal Support, or MOMS, program. A Governor Kim Reynolds-backed proposal to offer pregnancy support services to Iowans. Those grants will be awarded to Bethany Christian Services of Northwest Iowa, which has multiple locations across Iowa, Informed Choices of Iowa, based in Iowa City and Burlington, Lutheran Services of Iowa, also located statewide, and Alternatives Pregnancy Center, located in Cedar Falls and Waterloo. Total funding amounts awarded to each organization will be determined through contract negotiations, which are scheduled to be completed by February 14th, according to HHS. If these organizations sign a contract with the state in March, they should receive state dollars by February 28th, according to the state's request for proposals. HHS Director Kelly Garcia told lawmakers during a House committee hearing Thursday that 5 centers had applied to the state's request for proposals that the agency had issued this past October, but officials opted to move forward with all but one of the applications. The GOP-led Iowa legislature has allocated $2 million to administer the MOMS program and to fund these centers that offer its clients resources to choose childbirth and to make informed decisions regarding the choice of adoption or parenting with respect to their children. Also known as crisis pregnancy centers, these anti-abortion facilities encourage women to continue their pregnancies by offering counseling or donated items, like cribs and baby clothes. Some centers also offer ultrasounds, though these centers are not licensed medical clinics. Iowa has about 55 pregnancy resource centers across the state. Under the contract with the state, pregnancy resource centers would be required to offer counseling to pregnant women and to offer additional supports, ranging from maternal goods to assistance in finding employment or housing. These centers are explicitly banned from using state funds to provide or refer pregnant women for terminations of pregnancy or terminate a pregnancy unless the pregnant woman's attending physician confirms the termination of pregnancy is medically necessary to prevent the pregnant woman's death, according to state rules for moms providers. Garcia said the moms program is housed within the Division of Family Well-Being and Protection, a new department within the agency that was developed when Iowa Health and Human Services was formed last year. Garcia told lawmakers Thursday that division will eventually house Thrive Iowa, a proposed program introduced by Governor Kim Reynolds earlier this month that would connect families with private sector networks and churches for assistance. House lawmakers are also considering a proposed change to the Moms Program this legislative session. House File 2057 would remove the requirement for Iowa HHS to hire a third-party administrator to oversee and manage the network of pregnancy resource centers that receive state funding. That proposal comes after state officials failed twice last year to identify an entity qualified to serve as program administrator for the program. The first search only garnered one applicant who failed to meet the state's requirements. The second search yielded no responsive bidders. The House Health and Human Services Subcommittee advanced the bill earlier this week.
Non-religious Americans at 28%, survey shows, by Emily DeLetter of USA Today. More than a quarter of Americans identify as none when it comes to religion, meaning they are atheists, agnostics, or nothing in particular, a new study from Pew Research Center has found. About 28% of U.S. adults are religiously unaffiliated, according to the National Public Opinion Reference Survey conducted annually by the Pew Research Center. It's the second largest religious group in the survey. 40% said they were Protestants, and 20% said they were Catholic. Nuns are less likely to volunteer or vote in elections. Of the U.S. adults surveyed, 17% of religious nuns volunteered in the last year, compared to 27% of religiously affiliated adults, and 39% of nuns voted in the 2022 election, compared to 51% of religiously affiliated adults. They also showed slightly lower rates of civic engagement and were less likely to have contacted officials or attended a government meeting in the last year. According to the data collected, 17% of nuns identify as atheists, 20% identify as agnostic, and 63% say they are nothing in particular. Most people in the nuns group believe in God or another higher power, but few go to religious services regularly. They are also not uniformly anti-religious, and the Pew Research Center said while they found most in the group say religion does some harm, many others think it also does some good. Some nuns said they were spiritual, though the same is true of people who are religiously affiliated. According to the survey, 69% of people identifying as nuns are under 50 and are fairly evenly split between men and women, 51% and 47% respectively. The survey found that men are more likely to identify as atheist or agnostic than women. Concerning race, white adults had higher rates of identifying as atheist or agnostic instead of nothing in particular over respondents who identified themselves as black, Hispanic, or Asian. 2% of black people identified as atheist and 4% as agnostic. Nuns and religiously affiliated people reported similar education rates, although atheists and agnostics reported having more education than people who said their religion was nothing in particular. And now back to Ella for one more brief story before shift change.
World War II vet 96 receives his high school diploma. A Rhode Island man who left high school nearly 80 years ago to serve in World War II has finally received his diploma thanks to loved ones who believed in him. Arthur Masterson, 96, joined the Navy in April 1945 during his senior year in the East Greenwich Public School System, said his daughter, Elaine Vespia. He served in the Navy for 11 months, then was drafted into the Army for the Korean War. He never returned to school. After the military, he worked as a milkman and later for the United States Postal Service, where he retired. His daughters told USA Today on Friday. Vespia said that while the family was spending time together for the Thanksgiving holiday, her son-in-law, a history buff, found old paperwork indicating Masterson had left school to join the military. "I knew he never graduated," Vespia said. "I just didn't know why he didn't graduate. It was never anything he talked about." She suspects a high school education wasn't as important back then as it is now, she said. After learning why he never graduated, her son-in-law had an idea. Reach out to the school division and get him an honorary diploma. Vespia, who works for the town of East Greenwich, where her father grew up, emailed school's superintendent, Brian Ricca, who responded almost immediately. Ricca said he is used to fielding requests, but often has to turn them down. "This was an opportunity for me to be able to say yes, and to be able to say yes with a smile," he said. Both the high school principal and guidance program director agreed with Ricca's decision and found Masterson's student records. About a week before Christmas, Ricca let Vespia know he had the diploma. They were willing to host a ceremony for him. "But Masterson isn't one to like the spotlight," his daughter said. Instead, the family surprised him with his diploma on Christmas Day. "I graduated," Masterson exclaims in a family video, "after all these years." Family members tried to get the 96-year-old to flip his tassel as new graduates do, but he was too busy admiring his diploma. "Oh boy," he said after his family told him he's officially a graduate of East Greenwich High School. Ricca said that he isn't sure how many classes Masterson had left until graduation in 1945, but his time in the military speaks for itself. "If you've completed 3 out of 4 years of your high school education and you leave because you are choosing to serve in the armed forces, that life experience, that selflessness, that commitment to our country certainly is equivalent to whatever Mr. Masterson was short," he said. Vespia said that her father's military service was stateside, though he didn't talk about his service much. He has shared with his family that he thinks service members who have been overseas deserve more credit. "We tell them all the time, you served just like the rest of them," Vespia said. As for the high school diploma, I think it meant more to him than he will ever really say.
Thanks, Ella, for that lovely story to take us into shift break. For the last 90 minutes, your readers have been Ella Gibson and me, Seth Anderson. It's been our great pleasure to read for you. Now we'll take a short break to allow our next readers to get in place. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. Your new readers are Bobby Bailey and Mark Morrison. We'll continue with articles from the Des Moines Register and USA. And here's Bobby with some, I believe, opinions, because he always has one.
Yes, indeed. Good morning, everyone. And it is Sunday, so we do have a long op-ed section to share with you. So I will start things off with the Register's editorial for today. And the headline is, Iowa Leaders Keep Showing Contempt for Press Freedom. An insightful journalist covering Iowa state government won a capitulation from the legislature on Wednesday after rather transparently giving Laura Bellin of Bleeding Heartland website the runaround for much of the past 5 years, the Iowa House gave Bellin a press credential. The rules for credentialing had for years been moving goalposts that always managed to exclude Bellin, who writes and edits her site from a progressive viewpoint and is often critical of Republicans who control state government. Bellin sued House Chief Clerk Megan Nelson in federal court on January 19th, and a few days later, she had her credential. The sequence of events reinforces the conclusion that was never any that there was never any neutral principle about journalism or workplace at issue here. The lawsuit head-shakingly recounts evolving excuses that passes were not available to the public or to non-traditional independent media, that they were available only to press, radio, and television, and then to bona fide correspondents of repute, and so on. Iowa's judicial branch and state university athletic department seem to have no difficulties in giving members of the news media the same access without splitting hairs over the mechanism or content of their work. Instead, majority Republicans, who presumably endorse the work of the chief clerk they hire, took what should have been an unremarkable bookkeeping matter and made it another example of them dismissing the merit of independent reporting and the people's business. It's possible to produce incisive reporting on the legislature without special press access, as Bellin has done for over a decade. Many lawmakers actively respond to messages, and both the House and the Senate, to their credit, have greatly improved the public's access to all stages of the legislative process through video streaming. But the pass lets journalists work in a dedicated space of the House floor, hear debate clearly, and touch base with legislators both purposefully and spontaneously. Bellin said, "I hope this victory for press freedom will make any public official reluctant to deny access to reporters, either as retaliation for tough coverage or because of political bias." This resolution does not mean all is well, however. Unlike her predecessors, Governor Kim Reynolds does not hold regular news conferences that include time for reporter questions. The Iowa Senate shows no sign it will ever allow journalists to return to their floor seating in that chamber, last made available to the press in 2020. 2 years ago, a spokesman bemoaned, quote, "As non-traditional media outlets proliferate, it creates an increasingly difficult scenario for the Senate as a governmental entity to define the criteria of a media outlet," close quote. To repeat, among state agencies, it's seemingly only the legislature that's having this difficulty. "The doors of each house shall be open," the Iowa Constitution reads. Lawmakers going back to Iowa's territorial days have recognized their responsibility to allow journalists to report their deliberations to the rest of the public. Today's lawmakers should have nothing to fear from the journalists working near their desks. In fact, having a forum for impromptu chats should mean a better chance for lawmakers' nuanced thoughts to get published, which serves everybody's interest, including the 3 million Iowans who won't set foot in the statehouse during the session. As a final point, top officials in the executive and legislative branches set an example, for good or ill, in following the letter and spirit of the First Amendment and Iowa's open meetings and open records laws. Lately, it's more often been a bad example. Just a few months ago, Balin and others won a separate lawsuit against Reynolds' office over its failure to provide public records as required by law. By waiting to act until there's formal litigation, these leaders imply that rules are obstacles to evade rather than principles to uphold. There's much room for improvement by top state officials in respecting First Amendment rights, but they should start by bringing reporters, including Balin, back to the Iowa Senate floor. Mark?
And I'm going to read the letters to the editor. And there's a cartoon that's a little morbid. It's two guys being crucified. And there's a Roman soldier that you can see, one that you can only see their head, or just the very top of their head with the hammer. And the first guy says, "Who right-wing Christians think they are?" And then just as the guy is putting the spike in the foot of the other guy, the soldier is saying who they are. Not nice. This first letter is written by Dean Lerner of Des Moines. Dial response was not the real story. In response to countless articles detailing unimaginable treatment harms and avoidable details in Iowa's nursing homes, the director of the Iowa agency responsible for oversight of these facilities and consequently preventing these all too common occurrences, pushed his and his boss, Governor Kim Reynolds, defense, calling it the real story on nursing homes in Iowa, in quotes. As former director of that department before Governor Terry Branstad and his successor Reynolds ordered a collaborative, consultative, in quotes, both of them, approach to the department's oversight, I beg to differ. The real story, also in quotes, is that the majority of Iowa's over 400 nursing homes are for profit. It is impossible to know where hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars are going, and caregiving suffers horribly because of understaffing, turnover, and lack of training. Staff are poorly paid and scapegoated when the inevitable happens, largely attributed to management and ownership interests. Before retiring from nearly 30 years of Iowa service, I added more surveyors to inspect these homes, and the acuity of residents is far different today. Federal research shows that many more survivors are needed throughout the nation and in Iowa. Branstad immediately reversed my hires, pronouncing that the leadership had a gotcha, also in quotes, approach to regulation, and that industry collaboration, in quotes, was his solution. Of course, articles at that time exposed the industry's generous campaign contributions to Branstad, and recently, Iowa Capital Dispatch published yet another expose implicating Reynolds and her Republican colleagues feeding at the industry trough. The inevitable result of industry's influence has been a failure in oversight and resulting harms. Republican elected officials are directly responsible. Industry's goals are twofold: more government money and less government oversight. As has achieved both, and nothing that Larry Johnson Jr. says can undo the real story, in quotes. The crisis in care is out of control. His gratuitous, sincerest administration and gratitude, in quotes, to caregivers should fall on deaf ears. What, may we ask, has he done to help them or to address the state's crisis in failing our seniors? A lot of quotes. This next letter is written by Steve Lame of Des Moines. Weird. Biden doesn't act like the border isn't secure. If a picture paints 1,000 words, the picture at our southern border seems to have left Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas one word short. President Joe Biden has asked January 19th whether the border was secure. Quote, no, it's not. I've said that for the last 10 years, he replied. Perhaps he should have shared that word, no, with Mayorkas, his own administration, and the American people. Next letter, written by John Gersib of Des Moines. Eliminating library fines excuses irresponsibility. The Des Moines Public Library has decided to eliminate fees for overdue books because they impact low-income residents disproportionately. Really? You have three ways to avoid late fees. One, read the book and take it back. That'd be my choice. Two, don't finish the book, take it back and check it out again. Three, don't finish the book and just take it back. It has nothing to do with income, but with responsibility. When you get a library card, you agree to the rule that you return the book on time before it gets taken out of the library. Ideas for choice in AEA services won't work. I have spent my entire education career, which spans 47 years, advocating for and supporting families and children with disabilities and educators. I have served in many roles at the local, state, and national levels. Currently, and for the past 16 years, I have been a state special education mediator on contract with Iowa Department of Education. I have mediated and co-mediated nearly 200 mediations and come into contact with hundreds of families, teachers, AEA staff, district administrators, principals, and students, just to name a few of those with whom I have worked. The AEA proposals in the Iowa legislature would enact changes to the AEA system that devastate Iowa's special education services. The proposed changes, first dot, will make it more difficult for families to access services, causing delays in programming for students with disabilities. Second dot, will make it more difficult for parents to access their due process rights under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. Third dot, will make it more difficult to access comprehensive educational evaluations necessary for effective programming for students with disabilities. Last one, will put a great burden on the rural families and students to have equal access to special education supports and services. It appears that those making decisions are unaware of the unique and valuable structure and services Iowa's AEA system provides, particularly to students with disabilities. It provides an organized and highly professional delivery system. I have worked with departments of education in over 20 states, and I am well aware of the chaos and inequity that results from the, quote, being able to choose who will provide these services. I hope, going forward, a more thoughtful, educated approach will be used when decisions are being made about AEAs. Next letter, Eloise M. Crank of Des Moines. Resolution favoring Israel was a disgrace. It was a disgraceful moment. I watched with growing anger as the Iowa House of Representatives passed, by a cowardly voice vote, a resolution in complete support of the Israeli government and its tactics, without even a mention of the horrific suffering in Gaza. How is it possible to totally ignore the deaths of nearly 25,000 people, a majority of whom are women and children? Regardless of political position, how can the suffering and humanitarian crisis of people in Gaza be passed over as if it is nothing? Iowa House of Representatives, you should be ashamed! Exclamation point. Next letter, written by Barry Lancaster of West Des Moines. Editorial board should consider positive attitude. I find it absolutely amazing. No, not really, that the four register editorial board members can only constantly see negative on anything Republicans, especially Governor Kim Reynolds, do. I would hate to wake up in your homes every day with the thought process, quote, wow, I wonder what mom slash dad slash brother slash sister or whoever is going to be complaining about. Another day, another grump in my house. Unquote. Positive attitudes help the world much more than your complaints ever will. And the last letter is written by Jean Casey of Clear Lake. Give voice to independence. I felt like an outsider at my local Republican caucus on January 15th. Everyone there was an Iowa nice, in quotes, but this was not my natural political habitat. I am an independent voter who leans Democrat. Donald Trump was responsible for my participation in my first Republican caucus. I re-registered as a Republican to vote against him because Trump thrives on sowing seeds of divisiveness among Americans. More than 400,000 Iowans are registered as independent in no party, in quotation marks. Iowa needs an open primary that will provide a voice for independents in choosing nominees for public office. The mere 15% of Iowa Republicans who participated in the 2024 caucus is indicative of the need for such a change. In this strange political year, our democracy will survive if citizens actively engage in the political process. We must elect candidates at all levels who respect the rule of law, believe in the Constitution, and strongly support our nation's vital tradition of peaceful transportation of presidential power. In Iowa, the 2024 election is not yet over. It has only just begun. Bobby?
A big gulp there. Okay, here we go. I'm going to read a real quick sports thing, and then we're going to go visit Dear Abby and find out what whiny people she's dealing with. And here's the headline, T.J. Utzelberger shoots down spying allegations. This is byline to Travis Hines. T.J. Utzelberger was adamant after Wednesday night's win over Kansas State that he would not discuss whatever prompted a pair of contentious interactions between him and Wildcats coach Jerome Tang. That apparently changed after allegations of Iowa State spying on Kansas State's timeout huddles were reported by the Kansas City Star. The Iowa State coach lambasted Kansas State and those contentions in his post-game press conference following the Cyclones' 79-75 win against number 8 Kansas. He said, "It's certainly disappointing that after such an awesome game, an awesome environment and atmosphere, that I even have to begin by addressing something that happened earlier this week," Utzelberger said. He continues, "The ludicrous rumors earlier this week that somehow we were trying to gain an advantage looking into our opponent's huddles is an affront to our players, our fans, and to me. It's not who I am. It's not what our program is about. And I'm angry that someone should even make that suggestion, close quote. The situation spilled into public view at the under eight minute timeout of the second half of the Cyclones' win Wednesday, when Tang was seen gesturing to the crowd behind the Wildcats' bench and subsequently crossed half court to have an animated discussion with Otzelberger. In the usual post-game handshake, Tang continued to harangue Otzelberger. Neither coach would publicly address the situation to the press after the game. "I know you saw what you saw," Tang said, "but I'm not going to talk about it," said Otzelberger. "There's a point in time when things are said between coaches that needs to stay that way." Thursday night, though, the Kansas City Star reported that the issue was Kansas State's concern that Iowa State had placed managers and or other team representatives in spots behind the visiting bench where they could view and possibly record the Wildcats as they huddled up during timeouts, cited anonymous sources. Kansas State, though, through a spokesperson, declined to comment on the allegations in an email to the Register before Saturday's game. Otzelberger passionately refuted those allegations while also surfacing one of his own about Kansas State's coaching staff's conduct directed at the Cyclones' student managers. He said, "What is factual is that one of their staff members cursed out one of our student managers who was mopping the floor under the basket," Otzelberger said. He continued, "So let's put this to bed here and now. It didn't happen. It won't happen. And others need to be much more careful with their words moving forward." The allegation of spying on huddles is curious in its face, as it's unclear what information could be gleaned and how it would be relayed to Iowa State. Unlike football, with its rigidly called and executed plays, the pace and style of a basketball game would make strategic information from a huddle significantly less valuable. Timeouts also last from a few seconds to a few minutes, making it implausible to send information or recordings in a timely manner. Also, any lineup changes have to be reported to the scorer's table, making that essentially public information. The Big 12 did not respond to an email from the Register inquiring as to whether the league had received any formal complaints or would investigate the claims. If the allegations were a distraction at all for Iowa State and its players, it did not show up in their win over the Jayhawks. "It's just noise," senior Trey King said after scoring a game-high 21 points against Kansas. He continued, "We don't let that stuff affect us." And then, when you live in truth, people can say what they want to say. We know what we do. We know what we do well. At the end of the day, our habits and our character take over. Games like this are the culmination of that. Again, that was Trey King's quote. Certainly, the situation will make the regular season finale March 9th between Iowa State and Kansas State in Manhattan an especially anticipated affair beyond even the NCAA tournament and Big 12 standing stakes that game would very well have. "I wanted to make sure we addressed it. We were speaking in facts," Otzelberger said, "and that's why we handled it in the manner we did today when we had the facts after everything had transpired."
Thanks, Bobby. And now on to Dear Abby, newfound freedom sparks concern from young adult. "Dear Abby, I grew up with a very strict parent. They used money to control me. Even after I graduated from college and grad school, I'm happy to report that I recently landed my dream job. I have achieved financial freedom, and at last, I'm independent. My question is, how do I avoid going wild? I'm suddenly free to do whatever I want, and I'm tempted to go out and party like I never could before. I want to have fun, drink, dance, and finally start dating and maybe sleeping around. I worry, though, that I don't know how to indulge without going over the top. I've been going to concerts, which I love, staying up too late, and eating a ton of junk food. All of that seems fine within reason, but I already feel like I've been drinking too much. And I'm worried this might carry over into other aspects of my newly liberated existence. I would hate for my freedom to negatively impact my job performance or have any lasting negative consequences. I know I'm dealing with something most people process in college when there is a roommate to help you look out for yourself, a class schedule to maintain, and limited funds to spend going out. Instead, I'm on my own, working a job I love with the flexible schedule, and I earn enough money to go out as often as I please. I know I should be saving and budgeting, but I haven't gotten there yet. I have a fair amount saved and I add more every paycheck, but it's nothing formal. I definitely have been spending too much on clothes and I love wearing things I choose. Basically, I'm asking for advice how to enjoy my new freedom in a responsible, healthy way without going wild. Signed, Unleashed in Illinois. Sounds like it.
And Abby says, Dear Unleashed, a way to avoid overspending and prepare for your future would be to start saving a predetermined amount from your paycheck on a regular basis. You didn't mention whether your employer has a program in place which a certain amount of money can be automatically withheld from employees' salaries and placed in a retirement account. The way to find out is to ask. As to your newfound freedom, although you are a bright young person and academically accomplished, you may need some guidance now because your strict upbringing deprived you of learning experiences when you were younger. Talk about this with a licensed psychotherapist until you are less tempted to compensate by running wild.
Dear Abby, how old is too old for a bride to have a wedding shower? I just turned 45, and this is my first marriage. My fiancé is 49, and this is his second marriage. We are not, quote, just starting out, by any means. Friends are insisting that I have a shower and register for key serving pieces, art pieces, etc. Would it be a faux pas? Or does age not matter? Inquiring minds want to know. Thank you. Signed, Wondering in Missouri.
And Abby says, Dear Wondering, if your friends would like to host a wedding shower for you, relax, enjoy yourself, and agree. It would not be a breach of etiquette. And your age should not be a factor in whether you have one. And for everyone, you can contact Abby at www.dearabby.com.
Thank you for listening to Iris, Iowa's first and only radio reading service. And we're going to stop for a minute and have our little break.